Welcome to Jedi and Germs on the Jazz, week 3, or podcast episode number 3, brought to you by TornBoySports.com. I'm Alan Zog, the Jedi, and this is John English, Germs guy. John, say hello.
Hello.
All right. We've got a lot of topics to talk about this week. Let's go ahead and kick them off. John, let's talk about the current slump that our Jazz are in. They're in an 8-game losing streak.
You know, it wasn't long ago that they were 5-7, and it seemed like everything was going according to schedule, and now they're 5-15. And I'm comparing last year to this year to see how they're going. Well, for one thing, of course, they're on pace to finish worse than last year, record-wise. Their defense is actually worse now than it was last year. The positive, though, is their offense is better. We know they finished last in defense last year, but the important point about that is their defensive rating was 109.1, and right now it's 110.
Ouch.
So even though we're not the worst defense this year, our defense is worse than the worst defense last year. The only thing that reason we're not last is because the Lakers' defense is even that much worse. So that's not encouraging.
No.
Our offense is 17th overall, which is great. Our offense is 104.4, and last year was 100.6. So we're almost 4 whole points better offensive rating, and that's great, and that's still there. But we're still just not going to win any games if our defense plays this poorly.
You know, John, the most disturbing thing about some of these facts that I've noticed recently, during the middle of this last week, I was doing a little research. We're really struggling. The Jazz are really struggling in the first quarter. And if not the first quarter, that second quarter seems to, they flip-flop. When they have a good first quarter in the mid-20s, the second quarter is where production drops off. So they really struggle in that first half. And then something clicks in the third quarter and we're playing catch-up. And I can name 3 or 4 games where that's, you know, the Denver game, the Toronto game, even the game last night against the Magic, where they've struggled to score and do anything in the first half in either quarter, and they've had to play catch up in the third.
Yeah, we're a great third quarter team because we're such a bad second quarter team. And, you know, Quinn's able to say whatever he is at halftime, but then They're down every half. They're down every first half, so he has to say stuff at halftime.
What do you think is contributing to the slow starts?
It is usually when we start going to our bench. It's not like they start down 10-0 right away most games. That's happened every once in a while. But they usually hang with them fairly well until the bench starts coming in. And it seems like it derails pretty quickly after that. And they don't seem to recover. When he gets his starting five back on the floor by the end of the second, they're usually down. And then Quinn will take some of his guys out for the last couple minutes of the second quarter to kind of protect him. And I just feel like I haven't looked it up to confirm this, but it just feels like we always let the opponent score like 6 or 8 points really fast to close out the half. And so they go to halftime in these double digit holds all the time.
Yeah. And you know, it's interesting. I haven't looked over the last 4 or 5 game stretch, but prior to this stretch, I had strung together some of the lower first quarters of the year, where the Jazz have scored 13, 14, and 15, respectively, in some of those quarters. And there's a good handful of them. And I noticed in each one of those games, at least from a small sample size, that Alec Burks and Trey Burke seem to be the source of the struggle. The two of them are struggling to hit shots, and then on the same token, they're turning the ball over. There's in some cases, a combined 5 turnovers in the first quarter just from the two of them alone. And those turnovers turn into transition baskets for the other teams and things like that. I wonder if that was contributing for a while, but it seems like the Jazz have gotten the first quarter out of the way, and now it's the second quarter, like you said, where the bench comes in, where we're struggling.
Yeah, and Trey still hasn't got his shooting worked out. We figured his rookie year, his shooting was suffering because he was a rookie, but he's still not there. He's actually shooting a little bit worse this year. He was 38% last year. He's 37 right now. Overall, I mean, his 3-point shooting is a 31.6, and last year he was a 33% shooter. So we need him to get that stuff figured out if we're going to have a chance. He's doing other things better. His steals are up. His assists are up. His turnovers are actually a little better than last year. But defenses know that they don't have to worry that much about Trey's shooting. They cut off his passing lanes because he's a good passer.
Right.
But defenses don't fear his shooting, and there's no reason for them to right now. They need him to get his shooting up to keep them defenses more honest.
Right. And I think that contributes also to Alec Burks' struggles on offense, because a lot of the defenses have taken away the lanes he's used to because, well, they can double him or they can bring a second defender rather than having to guard Trey. And at least in some of the games I've noticed, that second defender has come off the top of the key where Trey has been at and gotten in and kind of mixed up Alec on some of those drives.
You know, what's funny about Alec is he's a second half guy. He's been sixth man for a while. And so his role always seemed to be to come in and change gears. And I don't really see him doing that much in the first quarter of games. It seems like it's always in the middle of the second half when he'll come alive and he'll start driving more and more.
Right.
And I actually found myself watching the game against Orlando going, this is where we really miss Alec, because no one was driving to the basket. No one was slashing.
Right.
And that's his forte, and that's what we really need him for.
I think we missed him in that Toronto game too, because, not that he's a great defender, but I really felt that his length and especially without DeRozan in the game, I think he would have been a much better matchup defensively against Kyle Lowry in some of the ISO situations that Kyle Lowry ended up in.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay.
I was going to make one last point about the streak. Here's some more discouraging things about the 8-game losing streak. 6 of those games were at home.
Yeah.
We just went on an 8-game losing streak where 6 of the games were at home.
Right.
Orlando last night, they were missing Aaron Gordon and Nick Vukovic. Toronto was missing DeMar DeRozan. Denver had been in complete disarray until just a few games before we got to them. Oklahoma City was missing their best players. We dropped that one. So even when you're home, you should be able to beat the teams you're on equal level with, or even teams that are a little bit better than you.
Right.
Because that's just the nature of home court, and we don't have any of that right now. So,
no.
Now we're going to look ahead. Where do you see our first win coming from?
Well, and we're about a week away from a nasty Eastern road swing that we usually do, the pre-Christmas road swing, in about a week and a half, aren't we? So
yeah, we've got Sacramento's away game on Monday, and we got 2 more home games, but it's against the Spurs and the Heat.
Yep.
And after that, 6-game run on the road.
All right, so that takes us into our second segment. Where do the Jazz sit at the end of this next week? Got that home game against, or that away game against Sacramento, back to back against the Spurs at home, and the Heat after a 3-day rest on Friday.
See, Kings have actually been playing pretty decently, and I just don't see us winning on the road right now. So, and the Spurs, I just don't think we'll beat the Spurs. I'm just never going to assume we're going to beat the Spurs.
I wonder if we're going to even be in that game.
I think we will. I mean, maybe Popovich will decide that's a good game to rest one of his guys, but I think that's their only chance. So the home game against Miami, I think is our next best chance. And they could, you know, they could turn it around over the weekend. I wouldn't be shocked if they won in Sacramento, because I just have a hard time thinking of the Kings as winners. But I'm going to go ahead. But, you know, if I put a penny on it, I would say Jazz probably lose against the Kings, probably lose against the Spurs, barring Pop sitting everybody. The Miami Heat game, I think, is their next decent chance to win, just because they seem to have good luck against the Heat.
It's actually,
but that's going to be a tough game. I mean, it's not like the Heat are playing poorly.
I don't have the schedule in front of me, but I seem to remember the Spurs on a second night of a back-to-back against the Jazz, too. I think the Spurs play the night before, so it's possible that he will rest guys one game or another. But that team is so deep, so I don't know. I'm kind of with you. I don't know that the Jazz are going to be able to hang with them, or at least not be able to win the ball game. That's for sure.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm checking the schedule now to see if the Spurs play the night before, and they do not.
They do not. Okay. I couldn't remember.
They do not, but the Jazz do. See, the Jazz will play Monday away.
In Sacramento.
And then they'll come home Tuesday to play the Spurs, but the Spurs do not have a game that day before.
And that's a late game in Sacramento, too. So, of course, those trips coming back from the Pacific Coast after a late game are tough. So, all right. So that's our schedule. Next segment. Next thought. Alec Burks. We're hearing all sorts of different things. Adrian Wojnarowski says 2 weeks. Jody says he's got, you know, sources that are suggesting this might go longer, that he might need surgery. His shoulder is obviously bothering him. And for those who are listening to us that did not know, you know, he re-aggravated it on Monday when Aflalo dropped him to the floor on that flagrant 2 foul. I wonder where we stand with Alec, and I wonder if we need to rush him back with the way things are going right now.
Well, what I've heard most recently was the 2 week time frame.
Right.
And so if he's out 2 weeks, and that's somewhere in the middle of the road trip. I can see them, you know, it all depends on how he's doing. I think the soonest I would expect to see him back would be December 22nd against Memphis. Just because he will have had that rest. They play Memphis, and then after that is the Christmas break, so they don't have another game for 5 days.
Right.
They might have him sit the entire road trip and just wait till after Christmas and have his homecoming be their home game against the Sixers. So it wouldn't surprise me if it's 3 weeks before he's seen. And if it is 2 weeks, I could see them still being cautious and maybe waiting another game or two before they actually bring him back in. They definitely miss him.
Yeah.
But they were starting Rodney Hood right now in his place, and Hood just barely got back from injury. And so we're seeing Hood's defensive numbers are going down when he's in the starting lineup.
Right.
He actually had decent numbers off the bench, but as a starter, he's finding the same challenges that Alec has, except, you know,
guarding elite level players at that position.
Yep.
Yeah.
He's a little taller than Alec. The wingspan, I think his wingspan might be an inch longer than Alec, but he's got a lighter frame, and he's been more used to the small forward position. So I don't think Hood is a long-term solution at starting. I mean, down the road, sure. I just don't think he's ready to be a starter right now, but we kind of need him to be because we don't have better options.
Right.
The only other thing, I mean, what else are they going to do? They can slide Gordon to the 2 and start Joe Ingles at the 3, but Joe's a rookie too, and he hasn't been consistent either. So,
right.
You know, we're finding out how thin our bench is, and we're getting exposed.
So that's a great. Sorry, go ahead.
Well, I'm just saying it's a team built where we need everybody to be playing their best. We can't afford to have people get injured and have people slack off. And we'll have an 8-game losing streak.
No, that's true. And that segues into the next topic, and that is we're light at the wing, and recent rumors have suggested the Jazz might look to trade away two of our deep bench players to bring Andre Kirilenko. I know I've read, you know, your thoughts on it, because I know you're not, I know you've talked a little bit about it. But with the depth problem at wing, how does that trade look now?
Well, I think it makes sense for a couple of reasons. Jeremy Evans and Trey Murray are number 13 and 14 on our bench. They're at the very end. So, I mean, Murray has yet to play, and Evans has played 13 total minutes all season.
And I think it's in two different games.
Yeah. So, I mean, we can afford to do it. It'll be nice to bring AK home. It'll be nice to have another veteran on the team. Be nice to have someone with a defensive mindset. And he's not the AK of old. He's 33. He's managed to get himself out of Brooklyn's rotation. For some reason, Lionel Hollins just doesn't have any faith in him, and he's getting some DNP CDs. So you're not gonna get some DNP CDs if you're a high quality talent. So I recognize that he's gonna be limited, but I think what AK can still do would be valuable. He would be part of the rotation. I'd see him play as much four as he would three. I mean, he's usually better at four.
Right.
And we're fine at the four, but I think when he comes in, we'd need him at the three as well. And I just think our defense could use someone like him coming in and kind of helping our bench unit have a better defensive mindset.
And perhaps a mentor role a little bit too. And if I remember correctly, there's one thing about AK that was good, aside from the intangibles he offered on the team. His locker room presence always seemed to be something very important for the Jazz and for Jerry Sloan. Seemed to be a guy who would temper things in the locker room a little bit. And I kind of like that idea in a season where we're already in losing. You don't want turmoil to sneak in, and maybe having a veteran guy like that that'll keep things tempered a little bit will be nice too.
Yeah, I mean, I know a lot of people kind of soured on him because they felt like he didn't live up to his contract, and that's true. But if you didn't have that max contract, then there wouldn't be those negative feelings. Some have, but there are a lot of people like my oldest son. When AK was traded away, that was his least favorite trade we've done, because he felt like Andre is the Jazz. He had been a Jazz man for 10 years. So,
right.
You know, in his mind, AK is the Jazz. And I think that might help some, help some hometown nostalgia to bring AK back, make him a Jazz man again. He liked living here, you know, he was a good citizen and all that. So I see more positives than negatives in that trade. I actually don't see any negatives in that trade.
Neither do I.
The money's about equal. If it doesn't work out, it's his last year. I mean, there's all kinds of. I only see positives coming out of that.
Right.
He'll be happy to get out of Brooklyn. Yeah, I hope they do it. And you know, they can't do it till the 15th, but the 15th is. Let's see. They've got four games in between now and then.
Right.
If they lose all four of those games, the trade's going to look even better. But they're probably going to be 1-3 after that.
Mm-hmm.
That'll put them at 6-18. So yeah. Let's do that trade.
All right. Now for a funny part of the segment, if we've got a little time to talk about this. Can I just talk about how much I really enjoy Jody Genesee's vines? I mean,
he is a maestro.
He is truly a maestro in whatever he does. And my most favorite one recently was when he took time to kind of throw in a little wake up from Quinn Snyder in with a little Star Wars teaser trailer. It was great. It made me laugh. But I look forward to those daily whenever he can pop those out. And it almost seems like we're seeing at least one, if not two, a day from him.
Yeah, for those who don't follow him, it's DJ Jazzy Jody on Twitter. He's the beat writer for Deseret News. And he's got, I'm just kind of scrolling through his timeline now. He's got a few up there.
Now, the guy plays it up right, both on Twitter and with his Vines. So if any of you, our listeners, are not following him either on Vine or on Twitter, again, DJ Jazzy Jody, it's worth a look. The guy will keep you laughing. And some of the harmless, dare I use the word trolling, I don't like to use that much, especially with Jody, but some of the harmless ways that he says some of the things he does and gets people riled up makes me even laugh even harder. So, all right.
Now,
go ahead.
One thing I wanted to cover is since our last episode, the Star Wars trailer came out.
Yes, it did.
How many times have you watched it?
I don't know. I've watched it a half a dozen times today already.
I watched it six times that first day.
Yeah, so did I.
Watched about eight times overall now.
No, I've watched it at least once a day. At least once a day I've had it. So it's, I mean, I think the Star Wars account, or no, it was the Hollywood Reporter tweeted out at the beginning of the week that it was the most watched trailer. It was like 40 billion views after 72 hours. And I think I remember tweeting out that I think I might account for a large percentage of that. I think right around 10 to 15% of that might be me that kept viewing it. I seriously, I can't stop watching it. And I get chills that just still to this day, today I watched it. And I got to the scene with the Falcon going up against the TIE fighters to end, and I got chills in it again. I get it every time. The thing is just, oh, I can't wait. 12 months. What did you think of it?
I liked it on a couple different levels. I liked the fact that they were introducing new characters to us. I like the fact that we didn't see a lot. We don't really get an idea of what the plot is. Some people might have wanted to see some of the old characters, see where they are now, maybe just like shots of Harrison Ford, Mark Hamill, and whatnot. We got a shot of the Falcon, so that was like seeing an old friend. And it leaves a lot to the imagination. I went back and watched the previews to the first six Star Wars films to see how they, you know, how they looked and played out and what kind of hints they gave. And this teaser is actually one of the least informative teasers they've done, but it's very effective because you know it's going to go to a few different worlds. A lot of it's going to be grounded. I don't think we get any space shots. Everything's on a planet.
Yeah.
Yeah, we don't get anything in space. So that's interesting. That tells me that it is going to be a lot on land, and most of the land looked like Tatooine.
Yeah,
it looks like. I mean, you see John Boyega, his stormtrooper is in the desert. I'm assuming that's Tatooine. We see Daisy Ridley hop on that sideways land speeder thing. That looks like that's on Tatooine. The roller droid looks like he's on Tatooine. And even when we see the X-Wing fighter, he's flying over a lake with mountains in the background. We don't know where that is, but everything's been on land. And then the Sith guy walking through the forest.
Yeah.
Everything's on land. So it's interesting that he went with that for the teaser as well.
Yeah. I mean, and this might be the first time we see a battle on land between the Millennium Falcon and TIE fighters of any sort. I don't think we've ever seen a battle like this on land. So yeah, it's going to be, I was listening to a podcast, and I can't remember, it was podcast 66, I think, was talking about some of these things, but they mentioned the very thing that we just don't know anything from this. And yeah, it looks like there a lot of this is on ground, but this really, it really leaves it open for us to speculate, but also it leaves us hungry for more. And that's exactly what a teaser is supposed to do. I think we're going to see more teasers over the next year. I think we're going to see one probably come April when they have Star Wars Celebration. They'll probably release the second teaser trailer, and we might see one again towards the summer or fall, probably around Comic-Con time. But that's all they're there for, is purely to tease and have fun with. So,
yeah. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised at this point now if they have like a 4-trailer plan.
Yeah.
This teaser, and then a second one, and then a third one, and then the final full one probably 3 months before release.
Right.
Which is fine with me.
Okay, I have to laugh and ask you really quick. Sorry. So when you were listening to some of those old trailers, do you remember, did you listen to the ones from back in 70, I think it was in 80 when they got ready for Empire Strikes Back and they did the trailer? The voiceover for that, do you remember that guy? He's the guy from the Batman TV series.
Adam West?
No, the guy who narrated the Batman TV series. I went back and listened to that the other day. I can't remember his name, but I went back and listened to the trailer leading in Empire Strikes Back, and I sat there and thought about it, and it has to be. It sounds just like him.
Well, I'll have to go back and listen now, but I didn't notice that. He sounded to me like at first I thought it was James Earl Jones.
Yeah.
Something funny with his voice, but I guess it's not James Earl Jones. I couldn't tell, but I love the initial trailer for the first one where it's a boy, a girl, and a universe.
Oh, yes. and it shows a little bit of the early on love connection for Luke and Leia a little bit.
Yeah, they really play up the romance between Luke and Leia in the first one.
Yes, they do. In fact, they didn't even go much into it with Han at all in that trailer, which made me laugh a little bit. So, well, what is your movie right now in the theater, the movie of the week to watch?
The one I would recommend people catch is Birdman with Michael Keaton. I'm one of those where as Oscar season approaches, I try to see as many of the potential nominees as possible. And I feel pretty safe in predicting that Birdman's going to get nominated for Best Picture, Best Actor for Michael Keaton, probably Best Supporting Actor for Edward Norton, Best Director for Alejandro G. Iñárritu.
What about Emma Stone?
She might get Supporting Actress. That category might get split. I mean, she was good, but Naomi Watts was good too, and Andrea Riseborough was good. She might be the one they push the most of them. It's possible, but for me, the two that stood out to me the most was Michael Keaton and Edward Norton.
Okay.
But I would recommend to those who, you know, enjoy Oscar season and just like, you know, good, interesting, out there movies, Birdman's right there. It had one small problem subplot-wise, which I think kind of prevents it from really being that solid 4-star movie I was hoping it would be. But overall, I think it's really interesting movie. And one thing I enjoyed about it is the vast majority of the movie is filmed as if it's one take.
Yeah, you and I talked about that, and you told me about that. It was a couple of weeks back when you and I had that conversation, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, about 90 minutes of the movie looks like it's all one take, and it's just really, really cool to watch the camera kind of swoop and follow them and go everywhere. So it didn't even feel gimmicky. It just followed the energy of the movie. So I really enjoyed that. Awesome. That'd be the one I recommend people see is try to catch. It's starting to actually leave theaters, so if it's still available, I'd recommend catching it before it disappears.
All right. There you have it, John's recommendation on the movie for the week. All right, John, where can people find you and get in touch with you?
I am on Twitter at germsguy, J-E-R-M-S-G-U-Y.
All right. And I'm Jedi Zog at Jedi Zog on Twitter, J-E-D-I-Z-A-U-G-G. You can also reach me at the same email, JediZog@gmail. All right, John, another great week of topic and discussion. Anything else you want to take us out with?
I wanted to leave a couple positive notes about the Jazz.
Okay.
Gordon Hayward has really improved. He's averaging 19 points a game so far this year. I've been pleased with that. We've seen improvement from Derek Favors. We are seeing growth with these guys. We just see that they're a young team. And one thing that I really love doing, playing with on-off-court stats, for the 7 minutes that Derek Favors and Rudy Gobert have played together, the Jazz have looked amazing. I hope we see more of that down the road.
Nice. All right, guys, there's your bright spots to look at within the Jazz and things to look for in the upcoming weeks. John, thanks. Folks, thanks for listening to us. You can find us on iTunes and Stitcher and on TornBySports.com. Thanks for joining us for another wonderful episode of Jedi and Germs on the Jazz.